Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have Daniel McAdams, co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
Happy midweek, Dr. Paul.
And today we have a special guest. We'll put him on the firing line here in a little bit, but we'll say a hello to get started here. And our special guest and friend and supporter is Tom Woods. Tom, can you just say hello?
Hello, Dr. Paul and Daniel. Pleasure to be here.
Very good. And Daniel, would you like to say hello so that everybody knows you know Tom Woods? I know Tom, don't you?
I do know Tom. I've had the pleasure of being on his show, the honor and privilege of being on his show many times. And my youngest daughter is studying the history of Western civilization with Tom Woods on the Ron Paul curriculum. So he's helped all three of my kids get smart.
Well, I'm glad you brought this homeschooling thing up because what I want to do as I introduce Tom, our viewers are going to know who Tom is, but I wanted to mention that Tom deserves a big thanks from us and anybody else interested in homeschooling because he was instrumental in participating and promoting and encouraging the Ron Paul curriculum, and he still works with us. And Tom, I really want to thank you for your ability to help us and guide us and give us advice on homeschooling.
Well, thank you. It took me 2 years to create the courses I did for that thing, but they were 2 years very well spent.
Well, very good. Today, our plan was to spend the whole program with Tom. You know, he's written a new book. And I keep thinking, I think Tom writes a book as fast as I can read one.
Maybe faster.
So anyway, we're going to be talking about his new book. I think it has something to do with COVID or something like that. But it's a very serious book. But before we do this, there was a little incident that occurred just while we were getting our program ready. And this is... This is something worth mentioning because we usually pick up on anything exciting, but this is disgustingly interesting. And that is, they quickly had an emergency vote on TikTok to ban TikTok or do whatever they want to do to challenge TikTok, to challenge the Chinese and the vote. 65 people, 65 no's. And one individual that was leading the opposition was Thomas Massie, so I really didn't have to read a whole lot more. Yeah. But Tom is just great on this. But anyway, this is a real tragedy as far as I'm concerned. And you know, it's back to prohibition. We don't like what they're doing and saying it. It came up when we were going through COVID and these different things. The government would come in and we would get banned with a coalition between our FBI agents and the social media. Well, this is a mixture of all this stuff because they're passing a law that says that that they can prohibit the American people from looking in on TikTok. Now, I don't know anything about some of this computer stuff, but I understand a little bit about when you have problems and competition and people don't like what you're saying or people getting to hate you for irrational reasons, that they do dumb things. And they don't usually just say, well, that can be worked out in the marketplace and in the area of ideas. But there's been not a whole lot of patience. It seems like there's some people in Washington and in the deep state that are obsessed, you know, with these programs to have the people, you know, respond. So we do have our enemy, and China's the enemy, and that's why they were able to galvanize so much support. And I was telling Daniel, this sort of fits my theory that I don't think that the no labels process is worth much. I don't like middle of the roaders. We could take your good stuff and our good stuff, and we'll put it together. But they end up doing the wrong thing. But, you know, I find it ironic that no labels wants to come in. And my comment in my head was that no labels, no beliefs. But right now, that's what happened today. This was bipartisan, both parties, gigantic. We have an enemy. We got to get together. This is all good American stuff. So that is something that we sort of disapprove of. But Tom, if you want to make a comment on that, go ahead. Then we want to get into your project with your new book.
Well, first, I recommend Joe Mullen's book, The Fake China Threat, because unfortunately, although one great development we've seen over the past few years is that there are more and more Republicans or right-wing people who are skeptical of foreign intervention, they always have some exception, and half the time it's China. Well, China, now that, we really need to be on our toes, and a lot of that's propaganda. But in terms of this, I agree with you. Congressman Massey is the person to follow. And he's been pointing out that although critics are saying that TikTok is a Trojan horse, he says this bill is the Trojan horse. Yeah. If you look into it, it's giving the president the authority to tell you which website, not just apps, but which website you can go to or that they can shut down. Why would you give the president this kind of power?
That's for sure. Good, Chris, do you want to have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's absolutely crazy, you know, and I watched a couple of the so-called members of the House of Representatives in the debate, and I'll tell you, Dr. Paul, it was like a kindergarten. The level of discourse was so low. I mean, it's really shocking. There were a few kind of dumb people when you were in, but this takes a cake. But you're right, Tom. I'm glad to see people like Marjorie Taylor Greene voted the right way on this. So I think they are coming around. I do want to read a tweet from Senator Paul, because I think he also captured it, just in case anyone out there is listening to us and not quite on board. So Senator Paul tweeted out this morning, they want to ban TikTok because it's, quote, owned by China. Not true. 60% of the company is owned by U.S. and international investors. 20% is owned by the company's founders. 20% is owned by company employees, including over 7,000 Americans. The CEO of TikTok is from Singapore, not China. So ask yourself why they keep repeating this lie to scare you.
You know, but they want to describe what's going on now is that China is a good example of what was going on in 1939 with Germany and the Nazis, you know. And, you know, in many ways, Nixon did something and guided us toward a lot more talking and working with. And we trade billions of dollars still with the Chinese and the Russians, yet they are our enemies. But, you know, the book that I found fascinating back in the 1850s the name of the book was Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And I see this every day, but we're going to be talking about two things today. We're going to be talking about this TikTok in Russia and China, and that's this motivation. Madness of crowds are going nuts. They're delusional. And then also, Tom's going to be talking a little bit about, you know, COVID. And that was all part of the same thing. And even in Tom's title of his book, The Diary of a Psychosis, and that's what it was called back when, with the madness back in the 1800s. But anyway, these two things come together because it is a psychosis, it's a madness of crowd, and you can't reason with them. And that's what you were noticing this morning. You sit, listen to these people, what are they talking about? But they never resort to say, you know, maybe there's too much government. Maybe there's answers to be found in a system of voluntarism. Maybe there's a way of looking at the Constitution for guidance. That is not available, evidently. And they continue with all this crazy stuff. And Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about your new book that is out now, and you'd like to talk about it. Tell us.
Well, I thought it was an opportune moment because we are approaching now the four-year anniversary of 15 Days to Slow the Spread. So that seemed as good a time as any to talk about it. And, you know, just the other day I was saying there have been three incidents in the 21st century in which we've heard people say, I wouldn't want to be a libertarian right about now. Yeah. And the first one was 9/11. Mm-hmm. The second one was the economic downturn in 2008. And the third one was COVID. You know, you wouldn't want to be a libertarian during a pandemic. And yet, in retrospect, I would want to be a libertarian during all of these. The libertarian response to all of these was optimal, was far better than the actual response that we got. And so the purpose of my Diary of a Psychosis is, you know, is to reach those people who are reachable. There are some people, if they're, you know, they're wearing a mask in an airport today, who are just not reachable.
Yeah.
But there are some, and we still have literally billions of people around the world who think that the public health establishment in the various countries did their best under trying circumstances, and they saved a lot of lives. And yeah, it was inconvenient, but they did the best they could. There are a lot of people who still think that. And Diary of a Psychosis is a merciless, ceaseless attack with a sledgehammer on this argument. Because the point of it is, none of it did any good. And I know that a lot of our people, and I love our people, have been around them my whole life, want to start this story on chapter 37 and start by telling everybody about all the sinister forces running the world. And I totally understand and am sympathetic to that. But most people right now need to start at chapter one. And chapter one is, none of this stuff they did to us did any good, and it did a huge amount of harm.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Here's what the cover of the book looks like, and we do have we have it as a JPEG. We'll put it up later, but it's a very thick book. And I'll just say, Tom, 4 years ago this week, my son was home from his first spring break from college. We were out in Galveston. We were eating some seafood, and on the drive back, it was a Sunday, I think. On the drive back, we were all laughing and making fun of the panic over this virus. What are they talking about? These namby-pambies, what's this all about? Well, two or three days later, certainly by the end of that week, we were back in College Station packing up my son's things because they closed the school down. And he had a year and a half at home. And they'll always be known as the COVID engineers because they didn't get that training in the labs that they were supposed to. So it hit home. And I have to say, Tom, I hesitated to open up your book because of what Dr. Jay Bhattacharya says in the introduction. We tend to suppress these kinds of traumatic events in our lives. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't want to look back. In fact, I cringe. Yeah. I cringe when I hear the word COVID now. But what your book does, it's very different. And now, if you don't mind, just explain why it is so different.
Well, there are other books on COVID, and I like some of them. But mine is not like I have a chapter on lockdowns and a chapter on masks. Mine really is like a diary where we're walking through as these things are happening. And because I was recording this stuff as it was happening, I remember all those little details that a lot of people may have forgotten. Like, I remember Alachua County, not too far from where I live in Florida. They established some rule of you could have one person in your retail establishment per 1,000 square feet. And the board or whoever was in charge was asked, well, how did you come up with that figure? I mean, what scientific principles were behind that? And they said, well, we thought one per 1,000 was easy math for everybody to do. So that's just a little detail, but I remember all those. And you put all those together, it reproduces what it was like. And I feel like we need this for a couple of reasons. First of all, we need our kids to understand what we endured because it's hard to explain it to them. They have to actually be able to experience it. But the other thing is, I have people telling me, you should just forget this and move on. But I feel like, when has that ever worked? Yeah. Oh, just forget this outrage by the government and just move on. Could you imagine Thomas Jefferson saying, the government completely ruined your life, but just forget it. You know, these things happen.
People who are witnessing this right now, and as we do, what is your opinion, Tom, on where are the people, the average person, the masses of people, the ones that are collective, but loosely connected, that went along with all this stuff? And then a good many of them got disgusted with it, and they resisted it, and that seemed to have been helpful. But where are we on this attitude? Next week, if they come up with another one, and I suspect they will, do you think the people are going to roll over again, or do you think the opposition to this nonsense has been building and it's strong and they'll never do it to us again?
I would say there would be an active enough minority that will make it difficult for them to implement. The same way when they tried to implement these so-called vaccine passports in various cities, they realized that businesses just couldn't be profitable this way. Blocking at least 30% of their possible customers, especially restaurants. Restaurants are operating on a razor-thin margin as it is, and then you're going to knock out a third of their customers? Forget about that. So they couldn't actually do that, even though they wanted to. And by the way, officials in Canada, and I'm sure it's the same in the U.S., and I point this out in my book, admitted that the vaccine passport was not actually meant to keep people safe. That's a dopey thing to think. In fact, the reason they did it was to get you to modify your behavior, to basically say, we're going to take everything fun and life-affirming away from you until you do what we say. Like, that was the purpose of it. But I do think I mean, you could see the filled baseball stadiums, the big athletic events, the football games that were filled, college football. And that was the, I think, in a way, I can't be sure that it's a majority, a silent majority, but it's a silent something of a lot of just ordinary laymen saying, we know something stinks about this and we're not doing this anymore. And if I may just tell a quick story about one lay woman who was a hero through this, whom we would never have heard of otherwise, and I'm so glad I found out about her because of this. And that's Catherine Hewig in Ohio. And she did something that to this day takes my breath away. She went to the Ohio legislature and she said to them, now all you people have told us that there are various things that you did, like introducing masks across the state, locking us down, limiting restaurant capacity, whatever it was, that would protect us. And then you've also said that there were other things that were going to make the situation more dangerous, like everybody meeting together at Thanksgiving and on and on. So she brought in a chart, and it was a chart of ICU COVID hospitalizations over time, but she did not include the x-axis, so you don't know what month is what. And she said, all right, I haven't even told you what snippet of time this is, but it includes the following events: the introduction of masks, the lockdowns, the George Floyd riots, the Thanksgiving. Can some of the legislators here, would you please show me where on the graph the mask mandate went into effect? Because it should be really obvious, according to you, we should see the numbers go right down. So can you pick that out on the graph? And of course, none of them can, because it's all random. None of it did anything. So they can't. They should be able to find it on the graph. If what we were put through can be justified, we would be able to see it on the graph. But you can't. And this lay woman, you know, not one of the experts with the credentials, a lay woman who can read a chart, confronted these people, and they had nothing to say.
Tom, you mentioned that you have a chapter there exposing the deep state, who they are. But there's one in particular that was of major importance, and that is the collusion of government and the pharmaceutical companies. And it's been around. It's still there. It's almost as incestuous as the military-industrial complex. But do you see any inroad today? We have a few good physicians out there talking about this, but it just seems like that is a major danger, not only to what we're talking about, the subject of viruses, and that it also involves the whole principle of the collusion and the connection between big government and big business, and that's a big issue. That's coming close. You know, they throw the word around a lot about fascism. But, Mises talked about, corporatism and government working with businesses. But his suggestion was that eventually it will lead to it. So do you talk about that in your book as well, when you're talking about who's behind all this stuff and the momentum behind these collusion of big government and special interests?
Well, I can say that one silver lining, and I hate to try to look for a silver lining in such a tragic thing, but that has come out of this, is that a lot of people are much, much more cynical about the medical establishment, because they've seen with their own eyes how absolutely uncurious their local neighborhood doctor is. No curiosity whatsoever. I'm just going to repeat to you the three lines they fed me. More and more, and Dr. Paul, I know that a lot of people listening were way ahead of this, way ahead of me on this. I myself never really gave health a second thought. I just figured I'd go to the doctor and do what he says. Now it's gotten to the point where I turned 50 about a year and a half ago, and I went to the doctor, and they said, well, now that you're 50, you got to consider the shingles. Well, I don't want to say a certain word that might get you flagged on YouTube, but let's just say there's a certain treatment for shingles that you might get prophylactically. And they say it's 87% effective. Now, normally I would have said, okay, sure. My doctor says I should do it, sure. But instead, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. Is this the same kind of math that got us 100% effective on the other shots? You know, and when you look at it, the math is all like not very impressive. Like, is this really 87%? So now I'm just a regular guy, and all of a sudden even I am looking around thinking, no, I'm just not doing this. So I think there are a lot of people now who, and I think even something that seems on the face of it unrelated, like climate change, is also going to suffer, because that's the same kind of situation where you have all the experts and they censor you if you disagree and they call you the same names and they say you hate science. And it's the same sort of elite obsession, just like COVID lockdowns were. And I think people are going to say, wait a minute, that sounds awfully familiar. A bunch of experts looking at some computer modeling and ordering me to change my life in ways that are dehumanizing and impoverishing sounds kind of familiar. I wonder if this is also a scam. So I think they've opened a can of worms they can't close again.
I think that's good news for us, you know, the skeptics of government and everything they say. I mean, the default now should be everything they say is a lie.
Let me say one thing here, because Tom says he's a little bit more confused now. He used to be able to trust the doctors. Well, we as physicians get a lot of misinformation too, and I approach all the things I think about in medicine now differently than when I was a senior in medical school and graduating, because, boy, if I was taught that and taught that in my residency, it was the gospel. And I think there is, being more concerned and looking at where your sources are, you always should do that. But there is an atmosphere that's different. It affects where Tom's mentioning the doctor-patient, but it is doctor to doctor, doctor to medical schools, because there's no reason to trust everything that they said and taught in government-run medical schools. From the very beginning, they have not been very honorable.
And the thing is, we laymen have been taught that doctors are almost like a sacred priesthood. And I have, why would I not have respect for doctors? And of course, there are plenty of good doctors. There are smart people. There are certain areas of the profession that are less touched by all this than others. But it's like the problem we face now is, where do you turn for people you can trust? And it's not just medicine. It's not just about what's really going on in the economy or with COVID or the climate. You just don't know. Or heaven's sake, gender. All the alleged experts. I'll say this. Another great thing is that nobody will ever be able to hear the expression "experts say" again without snickering. So we have that. And finally, by the way, this book, Diary of a Psychosis, it was a pleasure to write, because really I did feel like I was taking a sledgehammer to a lot of bad guys. And rhetorically, that's how it comes through. But there are only two real facts you need to know to be able to absolutely mow down anybody who tries to argue in favor of what was done to us. There are just two facts. And the first one is the case of Sweden. Sweden wound up with the lowest all-cause mortality of any major country in Europe, even though they did the exact opposite of whatever everyone told them to do. Now, if in March 2020 you had said to the Fauci people, if Sweden does the opposite of what you recommend, what do you think will happen? They wouldn't have said, oh, they'll probably do the best. No, of course not. They would say, no, they'll be way at the bottom and there'll be corpses all over the street. But the exact opposite happened. That can't be possible if these people were right. And the second fact is, when you adjust for age, which you have to, because this is a condition that affected older people much, much more. When you adjust for age, you look at California and Florida. Florida had better all-cause mortality than California, even though California ruined everybody's lives and decimated their savings and caused all kinds of social problems. Florida ended up doing better. And there was one time MSNBC actually asked somebody a tough question. They had White House COVID advisor Andy Slavitt on. And for once, the guy had to answer a tough question. They said, the age-adjusted numbers for Florida and California look about the same, but that shouldn't be. California should be doing much better. What's going on here? And I thought, oh, my gosh, they actually asked him the question. I wonder what his answer is. No one's ever asked him. I wonder maybe he has some intelligent thing to say. And he opened his mouth, and his answer was, well, there are a lot of things about this virus that we think we understand, but it just keeps surprising us. So his answer was, we don't know, but we want you to continue to do all these dehumanizing things. So he just flat out, he had nothing. He had no answer at all. So for me to be told that I'm not listening to the experts have nothing to say. They just admitted they don't really know what's going on, which is all I wanted them to say from the start. All I wanted them to say was, we're not really sure what's happening here. But none of them had that kind of humility.
Yeah, they had no idea what was going on, but they had a very good idea of what you should do, which is
listen to them. Yes, right.
That's it. Well, at the time, you were doing this, Dr. Paul and I were following your work very closely because I almost felt like we developed a sense of community among the people that got it. And I have to admit, the people who I respected who didn't get it, who went on the other side, and I won't name them, but I've lost respect for them that I'll never gain back again, no matter what they've done. Subsequently, even things that I agree with them on, if you get this wrong, I just don't want to have anything to do with you. I hate to say it, I just feel honestly, but we felt when you were doing this separately, and we actually did a conference once with Mises where we were all talking about it, I think in 2020, but just having you put these together because you have such a great rhetorical flair. I mean, you have a great way of presenting facts in a way, but just having you as an ally when we did the show every day was so helpful.
But and pointing out as Tom has about all the dumb things and all the rules and regulations and it all being wrong. But we haven't said a whole lot about the real evil. And that is, this is authoritarian, this is a mandate, and if you don't listen, by golly, you're going to be punished. And they punished a lot of people, and there's been a lot of people who suffered medical diseases. But do you think somebody's going to have liability for the people who have died from this? So that also is the big issue, and the families who have suffered from this, realize this. But people have... the more you followed your conscience and good economic policies and good medical policies, more likely is that you would have suffered more than anybody wants to look at.
Well, I will say, and I'm saying this not just because his dad is on the screen with me, but I will say that Senator Rand Paul did a fantastic job through all this, as did the gentleman we were talking about earlier, Thomas Massey. And both of them came out of the Ron Paul revolution. I mean, one of them came right out of the Ron Paul household. But what impressed me about this is that I feel like if we had had a President Romney, President Romney would have told us that we need to follow what Fauci says, and he would have continued that for 4 years, and the Republican Party, would have gone along. If this had been 2012, let's say. But something had changed by 2024 that there were enough right-of-center people who were willing to say, call me all the names you want, but I do not accept these so-called experts you've trotted out. I think for a long time, Republicans and people on the right, they're so desperate to look respectable that they wouldn't have dared stand up to an Anthony Fauci. And to see how many commentators did and openly ridiculed the public health establishment is extremely refreshing.
I would say Senator Paul will go down in history because he is the guy who dethroned Fauci. I mean, he slashed him up like a slasher movie, and it was beautiful to see. I mean, that was terrific. I do want to mention, Tom, that you are offering a companion book to those that purchase Diary of a Psychosis called Collateral Damage, Victims of the Lockdown Regime Tell Their Stories. Now, I have not clicked on that yet. You're offering it for free, believe it or not. This is the great Tom Woods. Here, want some free stuff to get smart at diaryofcovid.com. If you can, give us a little bit of some of these stories, because as much as I hesitate to hear them, I think we should.
Well, what I wanted to do was, I don't think there is a collection of stories in book form anywhere of people who suffered from the restrictions. Because remember, we weren't supposed to tell those stories at the time, because that means you hate your grandmother or whatever the crazy nonsense was. So these people really did suffer, and they had to suffer more or less in silence. So I have stories in this collection about, well, for example, Clifton Duncan was a brilliant Broadway actor, young guy in his 30s, on his way up, getting award recognition, mentioned in the paper, television experience, and then they forced the jab on him, and he said, on principle, I just can't go along with this. I don't need it. I don't want it. And it ruined his career. He lost his representation. He was blacklisted. You know how most actors start waiting tables and then they have their big break? Clifton is back to waiting tables because of these people. Jeez. And so what gives his life meaning was taken away. Now, I will say there's a happy ending to this. He has fired back. He's decided he's going to write and produce a one-man show on the life and work of Thomas Sowell.
Wow.
And when he put out a crowdfunding appeal trying to raise $10,000 for that project, he raised
$100,000.
So the people get it. And again, there are stories about I couldn't say goodbye to my grandmother, or my daughter just couldn't take the pressure of the lockdowns. I mean, it's heartbreaking to read, but it's something that we have to read. I mean, we read the atrocities of Stalin, and we understand why we're reading them. We have to read some of these. So I thought, I'll give that away at diaryofcovid.com when people buy the main book.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I almost would have a story for you. They killed my dad, you know. He was in, and I asked him about some alternative treatment. I won't say the word here.
No.
One that's been proven to do better. And they said, no, that'll kill him. We're going to give him remdesivir. They gave him remdesivir, and they killed him. So there's a story for it, you know. And if it wasn't for these bad people, my dad would still be alive. So it's kind of personal, too.
Daniel, I had no idea. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay. I'm getting ready to finish up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll finish first.
You go ahead. And then we'll give Tom to really make his pitch.
That's right. Well, again, this is the book. You can get it on Amazon. Tom, they put it on at a great price. The Libertarian Institute, our good friends over there, are the ones that published it. It's a great price. You should have it. I'm telling the audience now, you should have it. Even if you don't read it now, you have to have it available for your kids and your grandkids to understand what happened so that they can't do this again. And I want to thank you, Tom, for the great service that you've done during COVID and also for documenting all of these things.
Thank you, Dave.
Very good. And I want to close by bringing up a generalized subject, which I tend to do it to try to see it in the basic principle. And, you know, we have all kinds of problems in life, and there's medical problems, economic problems, social problems, or whatnot. There's two ways of solving it, as far as I'm concerned. The busybody, the aggressive people who think they know everything, and they will provide this idea of authoritarianism. We know what's best. It was dramatized so clearly with the COVID. We know what's best. You people that have been saying this and that, you're wrong, and you're going to be penalized. They are authoritarian, and they have power, and power and the government behind them. And you can suffer the consequences from it. The other option, which has been available in most of our history up until more so in this century, is that most problems were solved voluntarily. You know, if you were having trouble paying the bills, you got another job or you worked harder. And the voluntary arrangement was much better. But people have essentially given up on that. But that's the big difference. It's the acceptance of authoritarianism, which is the opposite of liberty. And everybody listening to this program know there is a definite difference from that. So this is what we want to encourage, is that answers can be gained. People say, well, it's impossible to solve these problems, but it really isn't. We have a guideline, one that has guided us in our early history, and that's some of the basic truths found in the Constitution. But I think what has engulfed us here in this century has been the fact that seeking the answer, Tom talked a little bit about, where do you go now to get your medical advice? Well, who can you trust? And that is a problem. But the real problem is the political problem, that lying is good by a group I call the nihilists, because that is what, you know, brought about Stalinism and fascism, the whole work, that they are the law of the land and they will speak for the truth, and they admit it. You guys don't know it. All you have to do is look at a Nancy Pelosi. You know what I'm talking about. They think they're godlike. And that is the problem. But they do it. They see it as a philosophy. I think, well, maybe they lose sleep at night. No, they don't lose any sleep at night. All they wonder about is, did I con somebody else this morning, and how did the income go? So this is a problem. So I think unless we address this subject, that you can't know the truth and you don't have a goal of seeking truth. We can't reach that truth. We can't reach perfect truth, but we can know where the guidelines are, and that's why natural law is far superior to the laws of these government bodies that tend to become very corrupt. Tom, how about give us a little pin on how, a couple points on how to get hold of your book.
Okay. Well, I will say, on just building on your last point about the tyranny involved, when a judge overturned the masks on airplanes, Fauci was very unhappy about this. He said, this is a matter not for the law, it's a matter for public health. And so he really thinks he's just above the law,
yeah.
Because You know, I mean, it was just a bizarre thing to say. And the reason they didn't want the masks coming off on the planes wasn't because they thought we were all going to get sick. It was because they feared we wouldn't get sick. And then we would ask, well, then why were we doing this all along? So anyway, I appreciate you gentlemen having me. The website is diaryofcovid.com. Not only will you find the book there, but you'll also find that free book that we mentioned. And I have a two-minute book video that reminds us of some of these embarrassing moments that we lived through. And in just 2 minutes, really slices and dices them. So you're going to have more fun than you have any right to expect if you visit diaryofcovid.com.
Good. I'm glad you put that last sentence on there, because sometimes when I went to the college campuses, we'd get a few people coming out, and I'd say, I'm going to talk about all the terrible things you're facing. But I usually finished with a 10 or 15 minutes of, you know, if you do the right thing, it's not complicated, it doesn't cost a lot of money, we can solve these problems. And, you know, I'm always amazed that many of the students would come up to me, you know what, I like you, Dr. Paul, is you're such an optimist. And yet 45 minutes of the hour, all I told them about was how terrible it was. But they felt more comfortable that somebody is recognizing what's wrong and gives them a little bit of hope. So that's what our job is in this business of educating people for the whole cause of liberty. And Tom, once again, I want to thank you very much for being with us. And to our audience, please return soon to the Liberty Report.